So I'm Pat Beecham at JPL, and as David said, I'm on the Outer Planets Assessment Group Steering Committee, and also involved in Planetary Science Technology Review Panel that we've got going for Jim Green. I'm not going to talk about the technology today because I was asked to talk about the different outer planet missions that are in existence and where things are headed. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the because the Decadal Survey, Planetary Science Decadal Survey is ongoing. Dave Stevenson has left for the minute, but he's actually on one of the panels, the satellite panel, and he's also on the steering committee. So in fact, he actually knows a lot more in detail about what's going on in the negotiations, and seeing as we're not at that stage yet where things are actually coming out of the Decadal Survey, I'll just tell you what the recommendations from the Outer Planet group is, the from OPAG, and I'll let you know what Decadal Survey missions are being done, and then I'll talk to you a little bit about the Europa-Jupiter system mission, which is the highest recommendation, and then some future missions, and just give you a summary. So the Outer Planet Assessment Group is actually a pretty active group. We meet twice a year and really try and project what the community wants. It's a pretty active, fairly vibrant community. And so the main thing was to get in that the same problem I guess you guys had before, where you didn't say SIM was necessary in the last Decadal Survey. We wanted to make sure we got in what was what had already been cited at NASA headquarters, that EJSM, or the Europa-Jupiter system mission, was the next likely outer planet mission. So we put that out there to say that's exactly what we wanted. And then the second thing that we wanted to also emphasize was that the Cassini Solstice mission was another mission that we endorsed, and we really wanted to make sure that the Decadal Survey didn't forget about that. It turns out that's a done deal now, so we didn't have to worry about it. And then the next mission that's of interest is Titan and Enceladus, and that's that was the next mission which the Outer Planets Group assessed, recommended as the next mission in the Outer Planets. So the future mission then to Titan and Enceladus, Cassini and Huygens, as you know, has done a fabulous job basically surveying the Saturnian system and given us wonderful data, but a lot of the types of instruments that are on there are just not good for in-depth studies of Titan and Enceladus. So there's a lot of interest in going back. So that's kind of the high recommendation from OPAG. That's, I wouldn't say new, but it's making sure that we try and go down this path. And the they recommend then is making sure that we get technology funded to do that. Again, as I said, Dave was out the room, but Dave is the one that will be evaluating all of the recommendations as part of the satellites panel and then the steering committee. So the other things that we recommended was looking at studies, doing some studies of shallow Saturn probe, an Io observer, a Titan in situ explorer probe. One of the things that we're interested in is actually landing in the lakes. We want to make sure that we actually go to the lakes and sample the chemistry of the lakes, trying to find out what type of chemicals are in the lakes besides the ethane, methane that we have identified thus far. And there was a lot of interest in a Neptune Triton KBO flyby and a Uranus orbiter. So those are the things that we recommended. And as I said, what comes out of the Decadal Survey is still to be decided. But the list of all of the missions that are being studied under the Decadal Survey are, Neptune Triton KBO orbiter, as I mentioned, that was of interest in Enceladus flyby and a sample return and a Saturn probe. All of these in yellow are the ones that I thought you might be more interested than the Mars, let's put it that way. There's many other missions, as you can see, that were studied. Some of them are likely to move forward, some of them are not. And again, we'll know more in the next few months. So the potential outer planet missions, I use the word potential here because of the ongoing survey, but the one that NASA has prioritized for the outer planets as being the first mission is EJSM. And EJSM...
What is the connection between NASA prioritizing something and it being recommended? I mean, what if it wasn't recommended?
Yeah. That was our concern. That's why we put it in as the top priority in the recommendations. Yeah, there could have been a disconnect between what the decadal survey said and the court decision that was already made by headquarters. They made
decision
part of the previous decadal five period? No, it was in the mix at the time. Yeah, it was certainly in the mix at the time, and it was it the top one, Dave? Do you remember? I think it was the top one for the outer planets. Yeah, it was. I think it was. Yeah. It was certainly in there. What was not known at the time and couldn't be prioritized as a result was Titan, because we hadn't had the Cassini data back. And so there was a lot of waffling in the decadal survey saying, well, we haven't got the data back from Cassini yet, but we may decide that's a higher priority. And there was sort of, I wouldn't say a shootout, but there was effectively a shootout in the last 2 or 3 years where the community... several studies were done. JPL ended up doing both studies in the end, and I'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. And EJSM was prioritized as being a lower risk mission. Okay, so this mission then is a shared mission between ESA and NASA. It's got two independently launched and operated systems. One is JEO, which is the Jupiter Orbiter, Europa Orbiter, that's the US. And the second one is the Ganymede orbiter. The timeline is such that launches around 2020. This is the current launch date that they're keeping. And the there's obviously a Jovian tour. To get into Europa orbit takes 2 or 3 years. So you're going to have a Galileo-like tour to get into that system. So we have a Jovian system tour, and then the moon orbiting phases will last 6 to 12 months, and the end of the prime mission is 2029. And each mission has about 10 to 11 instruments on it. So the goal then is to explore Europa, to investigate its habitability. And it's looking at oceans and interiors, ice shells, chemistry and composition, geology and landing sites, and then the Jupiter system itself. The model payload, when we do studies in planetary, I'm not quite sure how astrophysics works, but when we do planetary studies, what we do is we have a joint science technology team that actually sets the priorities and works on the goals and how to do this. And then ultimately we come up with a model payload. This is only a model payload. In other words, this fulfills the science requirements. So this right now is the model payload for JEO. And we've got everything from radio science, laser altimeter, ice penetrating radar. You can read the list. So it's quite a capable model payload. What will actually get picked when the AO comes out is entirely up to NASA and the review panels, okay? But these are the payload thoughts right now. So the baseline mission overview is that NASA is looking at launching in an Atlas 551 with MMRTGs. We're currently not switching over to ASRGs for this particular mission. They cannot be developed in time for this mission if the timeline sticks to 2020. It's a six-year Venus Earth gravity assist, and you can read the rest of it. The key to making this work is to get the radiation dose so that the instruments can actually work. And this is quite a concern, especially actually for the infrared instrument, because it's not just radiation, but we also have to worry about planetary protection, because the ultimate fate of the spacecraft is to go into Europa. And if we land, and even if we didn't land, we'd still have to have a high planetary protection category. So it's actually quite difficult. The plan right now is to sterilize the spacecraft. So we'll be also doing Jupiter science, Jupiter system science, so there'll be Io flybys, Europa flybys before we actually get into orbit, Ganymede and Callisto with JEO. So it's quite an extensive mission. For JGO, which is the Ganymede, which is the ESA mission, this is really primarily for the Jupiter system, but then also in studying, in-depth studying and mapping of Callisto and Ganymede. So that's the primary goal of JGO. The JGO requirements on the spacecraft are much less. It's not such a demanding mission because the radiation is much less in this particular orbit, and they don't have to worry about solar panels not working, so they can use solar panels. So it's a lot simpler mission. It's still in the mix of the cosmic vision right now, though. This hasn't been blessed by ESA and will not be for, I think it's 2 years, maybe 2 or 3 years. Christoph, do you remember? Is it 2 years? 2 years? Yeah. It's 2013, maybe it is. 2013, yeah. Yeah, it's competing actually with an X-ray, and it was well. LISA's in the mix. It's either LISA, the X-ray mission. EXO, right? Yeah, and Ganymede. So it's one of those three that'll. Yeah. Well, I think, doesn't LISA have to have a pathfinder first, as I recall? So, yeah, I don't know whether that would be done in time for that 13 decision. I don't think it's going to be, but maybe I'm wrong.
So, this business of collaborating with Europe is so fascinating. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have a disjoint announcement schedule. Now, here's apparently another example of an agency level agreement.
Well, in this particular case, it makes it quite easy, right? There's one less spacecraft that launches. Yeah. Well, it does, because people will say, no, because they're separate, you know, launches and separate spacecraft. And so, yeah, no, separate launches. So we are very flexible here.
So the mission is just basically the idea. Mm-hmm.
Now, in truth, everything is trying to be coordinated. Everything we talk to the Europeans, I wouldn't say daily, but very close. The collaboration is very strong. And if you think it's strong in the outer planet area, go talk to Mars. I mean, they are really, really tightly knit with the Europeans. So it's a very tight planetary, in planetary anyway, I thought it was actually broader than planetary, but I'm not so involved with the astrophysics area.
Yeah,
so there's a lot of synergistic science too, and that also will be carried out using both spacecraft. And so people have been working on independent science goals, and then they've also been working out these joint goals. So if you want more information, and I tried very hard to make this other than blue, I couldn't do it. There is a NASA ESA workshop. It's the fourth Europa Jupiter System workshop. It's going to be held July 26th to 29th at Sheraton Universal. And there is a website, and it's basically, it's just OPFM, Outer Planets Flagship Mission, OPFM at jpl.nasa.gov. So, if you want to look it up and attend for really a lot more information on both the instruments and the mission itself, then you'll find it out. So, now we move off to Titan and Enceladus, moons of Saturn. That just happens to be my favorite picture of Titan. As I said, Cassini-Huygens still continues to deliver wonderful data, but it doesn't look at the details of what we need to do. So the limits have been reached in terms of what we know Cassini can do, especially with the instruments. And so we're very interested right now in some of the furthering some of the questions that need to be answered. What are in Titan's lakes? What are they made of? The seas? How vast are the river systems? And we're particularly interested in the organics that rain down from the atmosphere. First of all, in how they're made, but not only that, what happens to them when they get to the surface? And is climate change. So there's many, many other questions. And the real goal is to try and answer some of these questions. It turns out that Titan is really an object that has a lot of interest for a very broad class of planetary scientists, from atmospheric scientists through geophysicists. So it's really a good target for the next mission. Enceladus is has caught people's attention ever since it was really looked at in the early 2005, when we started to see the plumes and the tiger stripes and the heat coming from Enceladus. And then the understanding this, of course, has been a real scientific goal of a lot of people since then. So in 2008, we had, as I said, these two studies, the EGSM study and the TSSM. EGSM was the Europa Jupiter system mission, and this is the Titan Saturn system mission. So we had two studies going, and this, what I'm going to show you is, all of this was based on things we had done before. So we had done many of the other studies in the past years, and this was a culmination. But these are the final science goals that that we came up with in this particular study. So goal A was to explore Titan, an Earth-like system. Goal B was to examine Titan's organic inventory, and trying to understand if there's any potential for prebiological molecules. It's not to say anybody's expecting life on Titan, although there are people that do claim to think that maybe weird life exists there, but it's mainly to understand if there's chemical evolution, let's put it that way, that could lead to life. And then the last one was explore Enceladus and Saturn's magnetosphere, giving clues to Titan's origin and evolution. So the mission design for this particular mission was to have a launch. In this particular case, obviously, it was the same time frame, because that's what we were asked to do. In truth, now, when we're looking at this mission, we're looking at, we're at least saying it's a 2025 launch. What will happen is, when the decadal survey goes through their analysis and tries to figure out where all these things can possibly fit within the dollar scheme of things, this number will change to some year in the future. We're not quite sure where. In this particular case, it was a 9-year Saturn arrival with an SEP stage, and it had a Montgolfier balloon and a Lake Lander. And the Montgolfier balloon was going to circumnavigate Titan. I could do so, I wouldn't say indefinitely, but quite a long time. The primary mission was several months, about 6 months. But the Lake Lander was a short-lived Lake Lander, simply to do some chemical analysis in the lake. It was a matter of hours. It turns out the winds on Titan, Titan's the best place in the solar system to go ballooning. It's got a very thick atmosphere. It's got winds which are about, a meter or so. They're very calm. This is what we know so far. It seems like a very good place to go. And the issues we have to resolve, of course, are, making sure we can put it in those cold temperatures. It's 94 Kelvin at the surface. But floating along around 10 kilometers was the scheme to try and circumnavigate. Because you can do a lot from orbit, and we still have yet to do a lot from orbit. But when you get down to the surface, if you really want to map the details, you have to get below the haze layer. And you can do that cleverly from orbit too, by picking the right wavelengths to look through there. But it's good to get the balloon as well. So this was a mission. It was a dedicated orbiter, a short-lived lander, and the Montgolfier. The planning payload for this too was involved a very high resolution image and spectrometer. that was to make sure that we could actually, and it actually looks through the methane atmosphere at 2.7 and 5-ish, 5.4 micron. And this has two bands. But then you can see it also has a radar altimeter, a high-resolution mass spectrometer, submillimeter spectrometer, thermal infrared spectrometer, and a mapping package in radio science. So the goal in this particular case was to get the orbiter outfitted with higher resolution, higher sensitivity, low mass, low power instruments. For planetary, that at least at the stage we're at with some of the missions now, we're very concerned to make sure we can do more science. Therefore, low mass and low power is really useful. Now, there's other people thinking about other missions. Those are the big flagship missions that we're thinking about, and which is what's been advocated. There are a lot of people thinking about other missions, and this is just an example of one that's caught people's attention. It's a possible sample return mission from Enceladus, and Peter Su is the PI at JPL. It's just a study that people want to do because it's kind of fascinating to try to fly through the plumes and try and get the samples of the plumes. The big key is how do you get the samples back, keeping the integrity of the samples because of the cryo samples coming into a warm vehicle. But in any event, there's still some issues to overcome, but we're walking down the path of looking at what those are. So this would be a low-cost flyby sample return mission. There's many other concepts for missions to Titan and also to Enceladus, but I thought I'd just put this one up as an example. I would do also some Titan upper atmosphere measurements, and it would be a return system. Now, people have wanted to do this type of thing for some time, and there's always been issues with sampling speed. But in fact, when we actually got to look at it, we came up with some schemes where you could cut the sampling speed down to about 2 kilometers a second with a mission duration of 14 years, which is actually doable. 30 is not. And instead of just having one sample flyby, you'd actually have multiple. So we figured out how this could actually be done in some of the senses. There's still some hurdles to work, but it's moving along. And the instrument payload here would be non-existent because you're really bringing instrument samples back. So you'd have a very small set of instruments, a mass spec, maybe an imaging spectrometer or something like that. Camera, see what you're doing. And this, right now, it's probably not going to be Discovery class. This is probably much more than a Discovery class because of the lifetime. But it's probably a new frontiers. So this is the type of thing people are looking at for possible missions. So in summary then, the community is pretty vibrant and active. And as I said, we have these meetings every 6 months for OPAG, and if you just Google OPAG, you'll get a list of what's going on. As I said, EGSM is prioritized, and we're awaiting the decadal survey. So this is actually the same website as the workshop. So if you just Google this, you'll get the. Or not Google, if you just type it in, that's what you'll get to the workshop site. And if you're interested in actually looking at the decadal survey OPAG papers, they're on this site. And if you look on the Academy site, of course, you'll get all of the full description. So if you have any questions, the one thing I did do, because somebody had asked a question earlier, and I don't know, I put this one chart in here right at the end. This is actually how we develop the instruments, the model payloads. So this is from the Titan study that we did last year, and which Christoph, by the way, was on the science definition team. So you can't read this. This is all way too small. But I just want to show you. So we start off with mission goals, science objectives, science investigations. What are the required measurements and determinations? And then we head into what is the planning, what's the measurement approach? What type of instrument, and these are just the short form for the instrument list that I gave you. What are the data products going to look like? And what is the mission requirements? In other words, what constraints are you going to put on the mission for us? So we work very, so this, in this particular study was, what was it, 40 pages, Christoph? 60 pages long? It was pretty long. But what I was trying to get at earlier was, if you don't get into this first left, first few columns here, you're never going to get what you want over here. So if this community is interested in doing this, they need to get into the SDT, onto the SDT, I should say, or somehow influence it very early on, because these get, I wouldn't say set in stone, but they are certainly done so that you'd have to, the changes would be much more difficult to make. And it wouldn't be such an easy thing to do. I don't know, do you use this in astrophysics, this sort of methodology of doing the, no? Yeah, when you do proposals, yeah. We use it all the way through. And what happens now for the AOs, a lot of the AOs, I mean, the way that this was generated was so that we could actually cut it off right here and discard this portion. So when you went to, you know, when the AO would be written, you could just do the left-hand side and discard all of the details of the model payload. So, okay, any questions? Yeah.
For astrophysics investigations, it would be very helpful if there was the old style Voyager and Galileo scan platform for instruments, as opposed to body fixed instruments,
yes,
what we've had with,
yes,
Cassini. Is there any decision already made for these outer planet missions, which way the instruments are going to go, body fixed or scan platform?
That's always a question that comes up, because it's quite, the answer is no. Go to the workshop. To be frank, I actually can't tell you about the EGSM because I'm behind the firewall. So I can say nothing about that. But if you want to go to the workshop and ask that question, feel free to do so.
You're saying it's not decided yet, or it's decided yet, though?
I can't tell you whether it's been decided or not. Not for EGSM. For Titan, it hasn't been decided, right? Because right now it was a body fix when we did the study, but that can change.
So what's the incentive for you guys, for the outer solar system planets people? I mean, is there some way that you could score money from the astrophysics people or the exoplanets people? No, I'm serious. I mean,
because
it seems like there's a real conflict of interest.
Yep.
I mean, if we're basically saying, oh, you need really good pointing to be useful for any of our science,
right,
that makes your project more expensive.
Yeah, that's the point I was trying to make earlier. Unless you can get it in, it is difficult. I probably shouldn't be saying that, but I could see a couple of ways. Anything to the outer planets takes many years to get there. 6, 7, 8 years, 10 years, whatever, long time, right? Somebody has to pay for the cruise operations, you know? Somebody wants to offer planetary science money for the cruise operations? I think that would be a good deal for Jim. I've talked to Jim Green about these types of things, and Jim is the head of planetary science. And he's actually quite open to it, but he looks at me and says, do they have money? And we had this conversation at lunch. So it's a case of money, and you're right. You've got to find the right person to be on something like these SDTs. But you know, there's people like Christoph that are kind of interested in these bigger thoughts, and you know, Johnson and Lenin, there's probably others too. But you know, there's people that have a bigger hat. The question is whether astrophysics wants to pony up the money. They'd certainly have to pony up the money for the instrument. I mean, that's another thing. Some of these, if we can get the mass of these instruments down and the power down, then there's room for the more of these things on the outer planet missions. But mass is a constraint for Titan, especially. Yeah.
Yes. Right, not speaking for astrophysics, NASA headquarters. However, we understand that there's a cost. In fact, I'll present something tomorrow about New Horizons, in which we're negotiating to see whether we'll do some cruise, limited cruise science before they get to Pluto. And the interesting thing is that in this case, they would like to have an extended mission after they encounter Pluto way beyond 2016. Mm-hmm. and they would like to do mostly astrophysics.
Right.
So for them to prove that really there's a group interest in doing astrophysics from there to doing the group science is important. But that includes a lot of not only the money we're going to pay for solicit investigation from the community, but also pay for the operations, which include the whole army in different places around the country. Mm-hmm. So that, in fact, is the largest component. What we give to the investigator is really $100K to $200K, but the other one is the order of $1 million a year, if no more. Okay, yeah. So that's what I found in talking to some PI from Planetary is that the interest of the PI in astrophysical issue is the key thing to get them thinking.
Right.
Okay? They know there's a risk, but I found the people that were truly planetary and really distant from astrophysical issues, they were very negative. And I have examples of people that I talked that they put us in the do not call list. Okay? But some other, like Mike Hearn, for example, the case that I've been cited all morning here, those are people that I work with them when I work at Goddard, and those people are kind of eclectic. They really like science in general. They like comets, stars.
Much bigger hat.
Right, and they like to do comparison. They like standard stars. I have observed standard stars with him using IUE in my days when I was at Goddard, and I found that he was very, very good to do this. So essentially depend on the PIs. If the PIs are really interested, mostly I would say in astrophysics, but they're interested in physics in general, they will be very open to these other possibilities.
So. Right, I think that's true on the smaller missions, you know, the New Frontiers or the Discovery. I think you're gonna have a hard time with the flagship, unless you can get some advocacy inside the SDT, which again goes back to the program exec at headquarters in Planetary.
In fact, we also find in Juno, it's interesting that it's going to fly next year, supposedly to Jupiter. This mission invoked three decadal surveys. The astrophysic one, the heliophysic one, and the planetary one. Mm-hmm. So for that reason, they became really relevant to NASA, and it became a big mission. So they're planning to do themselves some sort of observation of the exosody, okay, themselves. So if we want to pay and do something more, they'd be more than willing, because they already, they're invoking that as part of their science. Core science they're going to be doing. So
Good. So
I think that's depend on really on the mission and the PI and the science team.
Yeah, I think to it, I think some of the precedents has started to be set with the lunar missions being ESMD and then turning over to Planetary for after the first year of launch, you know, after the first year of operations, and then it's been picked up for science purposes after that. So I think the precedence is there, and it's a case of just making sure the money's behind it, and, you know.
I just had a quick comment on that point. My understanding was that basically for the flagship missions, it's like the project manager is sort of in charge, and the scientists don't report. I mean, the project managers do not report to a PI, but on the smaller missions, they do.
Yeah, but they're still talking. I mean, NASA headquarters certainly has an influence. And also, some of the stuff I think that you'd be talking about would be something, if you don't get it on early, you know, and at that point, it's not the project manager that's running the show. It's NASA headquarters. Yeah, Jim.
If these joint approaches are a way to, as you say, with a bigger hat, get more overall science out of a given resource, is it, I mean, I have heard cases in the past where there's a discovery or an astrophysics competed proposal, and it's actually negative points if it does something outside of the discipline. I mean, is it entirely beyond the realm of reason that in these competed selections, if it's a planetary mission, that there would be someone at least representing astrophysics so that it would provide,
Mario,
you know, a kind of a broader base during that selection process.
Yeah, Mario probably know better than I would.
I have a partial answer to that. I mean, I think for the competed programs, if you really want to have this, you need to have it written in the AO that this is a benefit, you know. And if you don't, then it's going to be considered not a benefit. You don't have that explicitly in the AO, but I think.
Well, that's right. That's why you need it in that traceability matrix in the left-hand column as a goal or a science objective. And if it's not there, it's not going to propagate through. Yeah, you probably know.
Yeah, we're going back to the serendipity issue, okay? NASA really, as David said, sometimes the serendipity issue is something you're going to be doing regardless, and you shouldn't even mention it in the proposal because you make it really unfocused and look like it's a sufficient expedition, the classical term. However, in this case of mission that we would like them to cross the hybrid missions of heliophysics and planetary astrophysics, for example, I think it's going to be a new paradigm that we haven't modified the AO yet, okay? And we don't want to be detrimental to the proposer because they're coming up with better ideas and to use an asset. So I think it's a new territory in which we have to defend. And that reason, to me, the recommendation that this group, this study group here, at the end of this 2 days, gonna write, to me, what they write, it's gonna go to the EXO PAC, right? And the EXO PAC is gonna be to the Astrophysics Subcommittee and then to the NAC, NASA Advisory Committee. And that, I think, is what they write and what they influence. It may have a change on that because I think at the right time, they're having this hybrid missions, but it's a new paradigm, we're a new territory, and we don't want people to start proposing and be failing because we want to do more and they look unfocused. So I think something had to be modified somewhere, maybe in the AO, maybe in the review panel, the instruction they're given for selecting something, but something had to be done if it comes as a recommendation that surely should be experimented with.
Yeah, I think that if you don't put it in the AO, the likelihood of putting a specific instrument or modifying the instrument to do that is a little limiting, but you know, you may be able to get away with it if you do it in a subtle way.
We asked the question for the New Frontier and Discovery about the next goal, and they said, well, we haven't thought of that possibility. Mm-hmm. However, we never excluded either.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so yes, it's not explicitly encouraged, and they all, but they had never excluded. Yeah. So it said, read whatever you want from there now, okay? Mm-hmm. But then mm-hmm. it's a risk.
I think the other question, if you're addressing some of these issues, I think the other question that has to get addressed at some point, kind of harks back to what you were saying, at some point this will be in phase CD and something will get into trouble and an instrument may have to get thrown off. And if this is a planetary mission, you know, are you going to get tossed off first? So I think you need to have that discussion earlier than later.
Yeah, let me say one more thing. There have been a lot of astrophysical missions. They have done planetary studies,
mm-hmm.
okay, including Hubble, including even a lot of the. So this is not new. They had not been optimized to do any of this observation. However, we do a lot of things. Now, in our ground asset, like Keck, for example, we manage Keck, but we do a lot of planetary observation there. So astrophysic pay, mm-hmm. but planetary does some of the observation. That worked really well because the IRTF is paid by planetary and astrophysic also does observation.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked really well as a model for the ground asset.
Mm-hmm.
And that should be expanded mm-hmm. into the space asset, which we're working on. So,
yeah.
So there's a precedent.
Good. Okay.